everybody. Welcome back to Her with Amina Brown. And I feel like every time I welcome y'all back, like, I'm always excited because I'm just excited to be talking to y'all. But I have, like, additional reasons to be extra excited because there is a guest in our Her living room. Okay, so imagine in our Her living room, there is no pandemic. So we can all, like, sit on the couch together. We don't have to worry about droplets. And it's, like, super great. I am excited to welcome comedian and writer and amazing human, Sabrina Jalice is in the Her building. Sabrina, what's up?
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to be in this living room. I love eating these peanut M&Ms from the stranger's hand, dropping them in my mouth. Got a couple other strangers sucking on my toes, which is honestly, it's a starting with a bang. Like, I might lay down boundaries eventually, but just to be in this non-pandemic space with all of these hot strangers that are attracted to me.
We love to see it. Now, I feel like Sabrina has given some extra, you know, layers to our living room experience now. You know, you're just rounding out descriptions.
I don't know why I went so horny right off the top. People sucking on my toes. You started it out like you could have been Katie Couric. By the way, catch up if you haven't caught up on Amina and I's background. We did a gig together where we also hung out with Katie Couric.
You did.
So I know a Katie Couric when I see one, and you started out very journalistic. And I just want to say I moved it into toes and mouth within 30 seconds.
Yo, like, okay. Because I actually forgot until I started like looking back through my posts from 2020. And I was like, oh my gosh, we were at this same event in February of 2020. Like, that felt like it was like 2 years ago. And even when you brought up the M&Ms in the living room and me just thinking, wow, the time of like being in a green room with a communal bowl of snacks. Like, when is that? Like, sometimes you'd be in the green room and there's not even like a spoon for the peanuts or a spoon for the M&Ms. They're just out there for fingertips.
Oh my gosh. No. It was like we had, I was working on a sitcom the year leading, I mean, I guess that's 2019 and early 2020. Mm-hmm. And the craft services was just like, it's, you know, you grab like chunks of cake with your hand. I mean, that's probably not what people should have been doing, but, or what I ever did. Full end of story. It was crazy the way we, yeah. Anyways, we gave each other COVID. Who knows? I know I don't have antibodies and we don't need to stay. I feel like COVID is going to be this, like, when we're let out loose to talk to each other, it's just going to be like this pit that you fall in that, like, if someone mentions COVID, it's just going to be this like swirling thing of like, and then the masks came and then the...
I mean, we've talked about how like my grandma always saved. Well, I mean, you know, I come from like Southern country people, right? So she always saved the tinfoil. Mm-hmm. She felt like, okay, we use this. We need to rinse this out. We need to fold it. We need to use it again. And as a kid, me being like, why would you reuse that? Like, you're supposed to use it and just throw it away. Like, I don't get it. And I'm like, wow, that's going to be us. Like, you went outside. Where's your mask? Nobody in this house owns them. Like, I'm like, what are the things that we're going to be like retaining from this period
that
of time?
What is our tinfoil with this?
I have to tell y'all, you know.
Well, it might be tinfoil.
Yes.
it might come full circle back around where our thing is going to be like, we can't go out to the grocery stores to get more tinfoil.
That's it. I'm like, this is going to be a wild time. So Sabrina and I met as a part of an event that is no longer, although I cross my fingers and hope it comes back. We used to do an event called Together Live, which was co-founded by Jennifer Walsh and Glennon Doyle and Abby Wambach. And it was like a renegade tour of all these mostly badass women. All of the women were badass. It wasn't all women, but it was mostly women. But all the women were badass.
I was going to say,
right?
I was
Everyone
like,
was
what
badass.
Is your gossip?
But Sabrina and I didn't actually get to do the tour together. But Jennifer Walsh put together a crew of a few of us for Makers Conference, which was in LA in 2020. And I have to say that was the fanciest hotel room that I probably have ever stayed in my whole entire life. I think I actually still have video of recording the inside of the room. That's how fancy I felt. I was like, this is happening.
I love a nice hotel.
I'm going places. So Sabrina and I met there and we all the cadre of us opened Makers last year. So we were like putting all our stand-up poetry songs. It was like each of us went up, but we were all like on stage together all the time, which was like the vibe of Together Live. So Sabrina, I'm glad that we did that before everything just closed up and went real wild. Cause then I got to meet you and actually see you doing stand-up live, which was dope.
Thank you so much. I also treasure that memory. And I mean, the taste of performing live, like it truly is. You were saying when we were like gearing up to do this, that you're going to be so extra when we get to perform again. I think that's like, you know, yeah, Together Live was so great. And it was, I mean, can we say that we're recording this the day after the Capitol was stormed by the Looney Tunes?
We should talk about that. It's important. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I remember just going to cities with Together Live, like Arkansas, or is Arkansas a city or a state?
It is a state.
I didn't grow up in America. Is it a state?
It is a state.
Did I catch myself?
I feel like a lot of the cities could have similar vibe. All okay. Have an Arkansas vibe.
I am a green card holder and I haven't taken the test of like knowing, and I've also traveled to all these places, but you know what? Geography is not my forte.
Same.
What is my forte? Joining Together Live, mm-hmm. stepping on a stage with all different peoples, different walks of life, mm-hmm. people in the great city of Arkansas in That's the audience, right. but just connecting with, you know, connecting with each other. And it actually doesn't, you know, strip away the names of the places that we live in, and just, it's all feelings. And that show, that tour was so special for that, for like, you know, I think it seems like that chicken soup that could heal the Capitol Stormer's soul, but who knows? Those people seem like they're wearing a lot of fur and a lot of masks and a lot, there's a lot going on.
Like, it's wild times here, y'all. Like, I was telling Sabrina that yesterday was a massive day for various reasons. We found out that Georgia went blue. Both of the Democratic senators, Warnock and Ossoff, won their seats. So I was like, I spent like the earlier half of the day like, yes, thank you to my home state for being like 0.000001 less racist. Thank you. Yes. Okay. And then 2 hours later, I actually ran an errand and came home and I turned on the news like, what is going on? What? So life is wild, y'all. As Sabrina and I are recording, I feel like a lot of us are still recovering from even seeing that. I can't even imagine being there.
All the plot lines in our lives, it's just, it is truly, truly so many. There's the pandemic plot line too, that we had seen some people outside that got a false positive from a quick test.
Whoa.
And so the day before yesterday. So yesterday started with me getting my COVID test back saying we're negative. And then Georgia, and then the Capitol. It's just like, it really feels like we're in an Aaron Sorkin fucking
no.
Jordan Peele fucking add all the brilliant drama twists and turns. And that's what we're up to here.
I'm like,
But then we keep on talking and connecting.
Here we are. And that's the plus of podcasting. And I'm so happy about that. And y'all, this will not be the last time you will get to hear from a woman of color comedian on this podcast, because I love talking to comedians.
Imagine it was. It's like, that bitch just wouldn't shut up about the Capitol trying to talk about comedy. And she's talking about these. Yeah, we get it. They wore fur.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of layers to what makes comedy. There's a lot of layers to that. And some of it is real, like, crazy things like this that happen. We have to get in all the layers of that. We got to get in all the layers of that. So I want to start with, if you can think about it, what was the first time you knew that you could be funny?
I feel like being funny and humor and getting laughs has just been like sort of a part of my language with the world. So it would be like remembering my first word, because my first word was so funny. Is that an obnoxious answer? I don't care.
I'm here for it.
I'm in control. I'm the captain. Yeah, I grew up with a big Pakistani family. My dad was the eldest of eight, and his whole family immigrated to America. North America. First stop was our basement in Canada, in Toronto.
Wow.
And so I grew up with this huge audience, really. And I think as we were just talking about, you know, the state of the world and it just and comedy, it's like it really is some of the deepest laughs, maybe the deepest laughs, are this burst of tension, building tension and then smashing it open. And that's what starting comedy was like for me, for sure, because I was sort of, it was shortly after 9/11, I was 16 years old, and I'd lived my whole life being pretty just like not interested in talking about the fact that I was Pakistani, because it was like, you know, it's just like Apu is out there and that's the only representation. So it was just like, it was never, and that was Indian too. Pakistani's even nerdier. They're not drinking. They're the terrorists. It's like, but then it was after 9/11 when it was so bald that in the news and the way people spoke and people just talking about Pakistan and like terrorism and it being synonymous, it felt so tense for me that it starting to do stand-up was this sort of pop of that tension, you know, like starting to talk about, and then that one thing led to another. It's like talking about joking, owning the joke of you thinking that my father is a terrorist and you're the silly one for thinking that, and owning, I mean, having a mustache, like I had a mustache at like 12 years old. It was like this huge secret for me that I like went to electrolysis every week. And then writing jokes about it was like so empowering. It was, you know, turned these things that were embarrassing things into empowering things. So that's, I know I did not actually technically answer your question.
You did.
I ran all around the gym. I tried all the different machines. You said do a lunge, and I've been on the elliptical. I've been on the Peloton.
Rower. Got on that rower. You got to get that arm work in there. Okay, let me ask a follow-up question.
I got on
question,
that rower.
Because I'm curious about this, and I'm always interested in talking about the comedic process, because even though I'm not a comedian, as a poet, a lot of the process of how stand-up comics do stand-up informed a lot of how I learned how to do a set of work. And I think there are some ways where sort of the spoken word open mic scene can be parallel to what comedians describe to me it is like going to do stand-up, that you're there in front of this crowd.
I've gone to poetry open mics because those are the places you could get some stage time and also get bigger laughs because they're not expecting stand-up.
Okay.
But I actually used to write poems before writing stand-up. I had a book of poetry, and my mom and dad, after I started writing some, and they, to encourage me, they would give me $1 per poem, and that's when the quality of the poetry went way down. And the book sort of turned into a comedy book after that. But it was just like, $1 a poem? Well, I've got a clue. It's on my shoe. Bippity, boppity, whoppity doo. Like, so that's a lesson on incentivizing your kids, but not letting them gouge you. I do think they're very similar. It's in within a joke with the tension and then the popping the tension process would be like set up and punchline. And for poetry, is there a way to describe the rhythm, or it's still like you are setting things up to rhyme them and to connect, you're setting up ideas to connect them.
Yeah, I think it's totally the same.
Basically, I am a poet and you're a stand-up.
Okay, I needed this. I needed this validation right here.
And in the movie of us, Freaky Friday, where we switch and I am a poet, Amina, and you are a stand-up, Sabrina, which great names together. That movie is probably just a montage of us doing great at both things. You think it's going to be like, how are they going to do it? And then it's like, no, they're good.
everything's going to be great. Yes, because I feel like my experience as a spoken word poet, why it feels similar to me. But I'm going to ask you about it, too, because I want to hear your thoughts on it. I feel like when you do spoken word poetry in an open mic setting where people are used to hearing poems, it's like your poem's going to live or die on that stage. You're going to know that day. If it's like new stuff, you've never done it, you're going to know that day if it's working or if it's not working. And that feedback was so valuable, even when it hurt my feelings. It was so valuable to be like, oh, okay, this thing I wrote in my room does work. Ooh, okay, I thought this was like brilliant. And apparently it's not. So what's that process like for you in the open mic setting? I mean, I hear comedians talking about bombing and the lessons you learn from bombing. Like, what does that process do to your comedy, getting to try it out in front of those crowds?
Well, it's invaluable. Just like, it's the exact same process as you're talking about it. I'm realizing it's fascinating that like, it really is about whether you're doing it in the form of a poem or in the form of a joke, you are putting out an idea in an attempt to connect with the audience. And I was in my mind thinking, well, how do you know as a poet that it's connecting? Of course, you know, the same way I know, even in the setup, when I'm talking about something, I can see people either connecting with what I'm saying, or, you know, there's a disconnect, or the idea is junk, you know, and the connection and the attempt is to keep on, I think, trying to get to the connection as fast as possible, unless that's like a device you're using in your poem or your thing to lose the audience. But generally, like getting people in and staying real and connected to it, because that's the balance. And I feel like that's just like, you know, a metaphor for everything in life, that balance between being in control and having an idea of where it is that you're going and what it is that you're saying. Because you kind of, that is the sharpening. That's what you're doing when you're going to the mic, is sharpening and sharpening and sharpening the thing so that you know, okay, now this is like a guarantee. I know how to achieve this connection and I know how to take people where I want to take them. But that fucking lesson, other side, shadow side, you get into that control seat. You're there. You're saying those words exactly the way you said them at the other show, but you forgot to actually be there with yourself in it. And be there, you know, you went on autopilot and oopsie daisy, that's a shitty way to fall off the cliff. Have I ever done it? Twice in my life. Just kidding.
I would never do that.
I'm constantly
never
bopping back and forth. I would never fail.
Do you remember your first
But it's always
mic?
Better. I found with stand-up, my first bomb.
I want to ask you, I do want to get to the bomb, but I wanted to ask you first, do you remember your first open mic? And do you remember what it was that made you go,
oh yeah,
I'm going to get up here? Because I mean, it's one thing, like I definitely have like my dad's side of the family, probably some of my mom's side too, but my dad's side of the family, I think, is where my like comedic brain comes from. Like I remember sitting in some of those family rooms and being like, people are getting a laugh out here. And like that being different from you being like, and I'm going to go in from a room from strangers and I'm going to like try these funny things. Like, do you remember that moment for you?
Yeah, I did my first open mic in January 2013. And I was inspired to do it because my friends and I realized going to see stand-up was pretty much, I think it was cheaper actually than going to see a movie. And it was this adult thing that we could do, that we were going to a club. We were sitting down, we sat down in the front row so they would make fun of us. And it was like, well, fuck movies. Let's just be here. And we would go to these shows. And I remember after the first show, I left feeling like I could do this. And there was someone handing out flyers and there was an ad for an open mic night. And I was like, well, I was performing and stuff at school during assemblies and stuff like that, pretty much some form of stand-up, but not really knowing it. And I thought, you know, it's so much lower stakes to go to this club full of drunk adults and try my stuff out rather than stepping out on stage and then I bomb and like I'm seeing everyone in the halls in the high school, you know? There were like, it was, people talk about starting to do something young with this sort of like the bravery, the, you know, audacity, but it's like, it's actually just, you know, it's practical sense that it's lower stakes to try something in front of strangers than you know, stepping up at school. And that first time that I did stand up, the owner of the club, it was at Yuck Yucks, and the owner of the club was stopping by to get some mail when I was on stage. And it had been really this like pent up, you know, I was this 16-year-old kid with braces and like half a mustache. And the world had kind of kicked my identity in a way. Like the world had been kind of kicking in that direction. And it was like my like get up and like push back. And it felt triumphant. I'm sure it was clunky as hell, but like it was my first time was that achieved that connection. The crowd, I'm sure, saw a young person that was, you know, like, but then there was something about me being this brown chick talking about Islam in this brash way post 9/11 that I got a lot of attention really quickly. And you know, that's all we're looking for. That's all we're logging out to these Zooms for is a little bit of a attenzione. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I got that real nice dose. And then second time, invited my mom to come see.
Wait.
And just bombed.
You invited your mama? Wow.
Well, I kind of had to because I had to get into this bar. Like I needed her to like let me in. it wasn't as sweet. I also invited this guy, Scott, that I had a crush on, but you know how crushes go when you're like a lesbian, but you don't know it. And then you're like, you know, the high school president, you're like, I want to be high school president. I want to go on a date with Scott. Anyway, it didn't happen. Invited him to the show. I just completely, it was the epitome of locking into autopilot. I'd memorized basically the script of what I'd done the first time and lost my place and just blanked and then just went down that rabbit hole of like, oh my gosh, what if I never remember? What if I, oh my gosh, I'm just standing here. He's looking at me. She's looking at me. They're looking at me. What am I? Like the first time I got off stage, I literally was like, in my mind, I was like, I think I could probably have an HBO special by the end of the year. And then the second time was just that like true stand-up rite of passage, kick in the teeth. You have no teeth. Go home, you toothless lady.
I'm just like, even though as a poetry performer, I've had the moments where like it just, where I guess it would have been the equivalent of bombing. The part that I haven't experienced that comedians know so well, though, is I was air quotes bombing in a room where people weren't expecting to laugh. And I feel like that makes the stakes higher because to your point, if I'm there as a poet and like my little thing, I try it and it doesn't go, it's like, oh man, it didn't go. But they don't know what to expect, really. You know, they're like, it could be depressing. It could be a breakup poem. It could be a poem about leaves. You know, we don't know. They're just there seeing.
Yeah,
but when
yeah,
you're there yeah. in front of like an audience that's like, I paid this money. I bought these drinks because I came here to laugh. So the pressure is on the person on stage to be funny. Like that feels like the stakes are higher to me than what, you know, than what I would have experienced as a poet, you know?
I think to me, I feel like this is also something that I've matured into feeling about kind of all of it is like all that we can do is bring ourselves. Mm. And that pressure of like how much someone paid to get into the show, it's like they did. They came for the experience. And if you're going to see me on a day where I'm like shining, the risk that you is also that you're going to see me on a day where I'm polishing, and the risk when I'm polishing is you're going to see me on a day where I have no teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to be the experience for you. You're going to watch my 15-minute special on Netflix where I killed. Then you're going to turn to your weird looking boyfriend. Cause why didn't you enjoy me the first time? I'm really going there with this person. And you're going to say, you know, I saw that bitch bomb. but then also the other thing is the real maturity of it is on the other side of that is the more you do something, the more prepared you are for it. And in the preparation with stand-up, which I'm sure it's also similar with poetry, you are prepared to share the polished stuff. You know, you're there, you can, it's a system, you know? Like for me, at least, you're sandwiching in some guaranteed laughs and you're taking some risks, you know? It's almost like, I would think it's probably like for an average person, it's like a job interview. What are you going to go? You're going to go in there just like not thinking about it at all before you go in? No, you're going to think there's going to be some questions I know they're going to ask me or that I can lead to. I've got those stories down. I know how to connect on those stories. And everything else, I got to trust that I'm like in a good enough headspace to just like wing it. And you know, I think the thing with stand-up, and maybe it's similar with poetry, if it really is about the honesty as a way of connect. I really think that an honest connection, it's really about an honest connection. Like, I don't think there is a way to bomb if you are truly sharing. I don't know, maybe there is. I don't want to encourage people. You know what? It's a pandemic. Don't go out there to the open mics with your disconnected shit. No, I feel like if you're even if you are a disconnected person or you're antisocial or whatever, you're not like a man of the people, you still, if you shared something, one thing that was true and then reflected on it, you'd probably have a pretty good joke. And I always tend to, I think, I mean, like that's what sort of inspired me to start was this, like a little bit the Islamophobia and probably also just being a fucking girl in hoop earrings and a tube top and my brother's jeans, being like, why does the bottom part of my body look right and the top part feel like I'm a drag queen? You know, like just, I think that another sort of recipe for comedy sauce is going to be some strife and some fish out of the water, some feeling like, why am I the only one not normal here?
Ooh, that's powerful. That's powerful to think of that. To think of that. Why? Like, because then it's like, if I come to stage with that as a performer, like almost every human being can identify with that feeling. Almost everybody has felt that in some way. Mean,
yeah, the irony too. Yeah, to talk about what makes you feel like you don't belong being the thing that actually is the key to belonging.
Ooh, I didn't know it was going to get this deep, Sabrina. Ooh, I didn't know.
Me neither.
That touched my soul in a place. Okay, let me ask you about this. What is the role that writing plays in your comedic process? Like, I know that every comedian's different. Everybody has a different way. Are you a person that is sort of putting some things in a note app or in a notepad somewhere as they come to you? Like, is writing a part of comedy for you as it relates to stand-up? And then I do want to talk about how that transitioned for you in a part of your career as a comedian includes stand-up, but also for you that includes comedy writing. So when you're doing stand-up, is writing a part of that? Do you find yourself writing down the bits, the jokes? How does that part work for you?
I think each joke is born differently. Like sometimes I would think of like a fully fleshed out joke, and other times I could just think of an idea. Generally speaking, though, it's some kind of idea. It's like some thought or story that that feels special. It feels like it could be a seed. Then you take the seed and you work it out on stage. And now as I'm saying it, it was like so sad when I just like naturally, it was like, I used to, when I made stand-up comedy, you know, but it is, it's just,
times.
And actually this is a perfect time to say, I'm so grateful that I started to write for TV because I realized I really am just someone who's drawn to sharing and connecting. And the more I realized at 16, that stand-up could be this vessel for sharing and connecting. And the power, to be honest, of like being the one up there, being able to lead the discourse. And then when I wrote my first spec script, And then got agents, and then they sent it out, and I got my first writing job on a sitcom in LA. It was this, it felt similar to when I had first stepped on stage, where I'm like, oh my gosh, there's snacks here. There's, we're writing what we write. They've got to build a fucking set for. They've got it like, actors are going to put makeup on their face and then say these lines. And then that is going to make this crowd laugh. And then that is all going to be taped and shipped out all over the world. That became this other rush of, holy shit, this is another vessel. And I'm now writing two pilots. One is a CBS pilot. The other one is an ABC pilot. And it's like spicy, dicey pirate water in the network seas. You know, like the grounded realness is like, will those become shows? Chances are probably not, but to be able to like grow those seeds and write those scripts, like what an amazing thing. What an amazing, cool thing that's my job. Like I really am grateful that I have TV writing, because it's another way that I can express in this moment where stand-up is like I'm not really drawn to Zoom stand-up. I've seen people do great things. I've also seen a lot of like, you know, I've never had straight sex, but I imagine it's kind of like wearing so many condoms based on the stand-up that I've seen. Wearing a thick condom.
I gotta say,
you know, you really have to connect on what's honest for you, and what's honest for me in that moment was straight sex. I was like, if I go to straight sex with condoms, the world is my oyster, baby.
I really appreciate the potency of the metaphors here in this conversation. That's
oh,
really
yeah,
what
it's
I
gonna
mean.
Be. It's gonna be a barn burner. That is a metaphor, right?
Same, it is.
I just realized, though, that I didn't answer your question yet again.
Okay,
did the row machine. Now I'm remembering what you asked me was, do you write stand-up comedy? Oh, yeah, I did answer it. I said sometimes, and then mostly you're writing down the idea. And then for me personally, I like to improvise on stage a little bit, talk it out. Or talk it out with myself before I get on stage, then get on stage and realize the surprising areas where you are connecting along the way. That's the interesting and cool thing, is like you think you know where you're going, and then you get on stage and it becomes sort of like surfing. And that's, to me, that's the most fun. That's the thing that I miss, that moment. That's the real connection, where you're like, you're informing each other, the crowd and you are moving together. And it's pretty much feels like straight sex, no condom.
I'm never going to forget that metaphor. Like, it's just going to be like, as soon as you said with all the condoms, I was like, yo,
oh my gosh,
that's no. And I was just telling someone in a meeting today, I was just saying how as a writer, I can just be stuck in my head a lot of the times. And stage is one of the few places of my life that I'm not. Like, I don't know. It's like I get up there, and if I'm, you know, in a good space inside myself, it's like I just get up there and start talking to people, and I almost like, I forget to be self-conscious, or I forget to be stuck in my head about it, which then takes some of the things I thought might be funny. And then I tried them out on stage there and was like, hey, I just said that thing that I didn't mean to say. And that was actually funnier than the thing I had written down I was going to say.
Uh-huh. I mean, that just shows you how thirsty people are for something real. It's like the moment that you say the thing, and then they're a part of the moment that you know that you said the thing, and then they know their part. They're kind of writing it with you. I remember that's why we would sit in the front row at the stand-up show. We wanted to be a part of it.
Now, when you told me that,
I mean,
I was
then
like,
I would.
I was like, Sabrina.
Then I would grow up to despise that kind of person. Not actually. We weren't yelling at them. We were just waiting for them to be like, hey, Spice Girls fans. And we're like, we do like Spice Girls. What are you, the Spice Girl groupie squad? He's talking to us! I vividly remember the first show I went to. one of the comics, she kept on like fiddling with her eye and she looked over specific. Oh no, no, she didn't look over. She was like commenting on how her mascara or whatever was bothering her. And as she walked off stage, she looked at me and she goes, "Hey kid, never wear liquid liner on stage," and kept on walking. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'll never wear liquid liner on stage." Like, just like, just feeling like she talked to me like a nudge to like, you know, you look back. I think my hesitancy is like, I do know there is a balance with how much you can lean into signs, you know, like some people will be like, see a stop sign and be like, "Oh my gosh, I just quit smoking yesterday." Like, it's, you know, it's like you can see a sign in a lot of things, but was that a sign, Amina?
I'm going to go with yes.
Tell you one thing. My little run there about signs completely disconnected me on this podcast. And that's how you do it, folks. That's how you do it. That's how you do it.
I'm just like, I'm still like, when you were like, my friends and I decided to sit in the front row of a comedy show, I'm like, I don't have it in me, Sabrina. Whenever I go to comedy shows, I'm always like, I got to be on that 3-4 rows back. Cause I'm like, whenever I'm watching comedians talk to the people in the front row, like sometimes it's like, "Oh, are you guys together?" And it's like a little like friendly banter a little bit. And then sometimes it gets a little like, are they going to make those people break up? Like by the time the comedian finishes, I'm like, those people are not going to be together when the show is over.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely some people's styles. I did like have a fantasy as you were, when you said, "I don't sit in the front row," I was like, but I bet you're like poetry self that is like not, when you're like describing not being self-conscious. Like the fantasy that I had would be that you were sitting in the front row. Someone tried to like make a wise joke about you. And then you like stood up and you were like, "You are roasted by my poetry."
This is my dream. You know what? I'm glad you brought this up because I need to start making a list of things that I'm going to do when it's safe to go to live shows again. And I think that needs to be in my like top 5 experiences, that I'm going to go and sit in the front. And when the comedian tries to come for me, I'm going to be like, "You're not just about to get heckled. You're about to get poemed. Now, look what's about to happen to you." Yeah. So I'm going to put that on my list of things to do because it's going to be wild out here. Sabrina and I were actually talking about this before we started recording. We were talking about like, what are we going to do? We can actually like be back in front of an audience. And I'm like, I'm somewhere between like, I'm going to be crying and trying to hug everyone that came to the show. And also trying to find, Sabrina had to give me the name for this comedian. I was like, who's the comedian with like the watermelons? And he like breaks soap in the watermelons and people have to wear the plastic. And I'm like, I need to find like whatever my thing is. Like, I'm going to cut up a bunch of peaches and just start throwing crazy things at people. I don't know. I'm going to be so like, everyone's here in person without a mask. Oh gosh, it's going to be amazing.
This is how thirsty you are to perform, that you've been imagining different fruits to chop up on stage.
Yes, that is the level of thirst.
Honestly,
that we have reached.
I would love it, that you sold me at cutting up peaches. Like if there was someone cutting up slices of peaches on stage and handing them out, I'd be at that tent at Bonnaroo.
Okay. I mean, you know, who doesn't love a peach? Really, I don't know those people. Maybe some people don't. Maybe some of y'all listening, y'all don't. But listen. Need to work on it. Peaches are very lovable.
I'm both like thinking it's a great idea and then also thinking like, just imagine like lugging the peaches to the show and washing them.
I mean, what? Do you wash them? Maybe you don't. Maybe you just
take
your risks.
Maybe everyone's
out there
vaccinated. And
okay, talk to me about this because I'm curious about this. When you went into doing comedy writing for TV, is it more, and maybe you've had various experiences, but is it more like solo writing? Like you're given us something and you write it alone? Or is it more like you're writing with other people? And was that an adjustment coming from stand-up where you're writing well, for one, you're writing by yourself, but you're also writing for yourself. You're writing things for yourself to say. What has been your experience now being a comedy writer for TV?
Well, my first job was like definitely a culture shock where it's like, okay, everybody's wearing their shoes all day long. I definitely look back on that job and I should send like just a reply all to the whole staff being like, I'm sorry that my feet were truly naked on the table. I was just Eliza Doolittle and no one was not making me the Pygmalion. Is the Pygmalion the one that she's bad and has bad accent, or we can't go down that. We don't have enough time. Mm-hmm. I am just getting word from producers. We need to back away from the Pygmalion. We're approaching a lawsuit with the playwright of
it's
that.
Tricky. It can be tricky.
Book. Mm-hmm. George Bernard Shaw actually was the playwright of the Pygmalion. And if you guessed that right, tweet in for a chance to win a chat with me about the Pygmalion.
And some sliced peaches as soon as we can. Okay.
So I was like needed to be like tamed in that space a little bit because it's kind of buttoned up. My friend Jack Knight wrote on Big Mouth and he said that writing on a show is like playing polo and doing stand up is like playing basketball.
Oh.
Like there's like a bit of, I mean, specifically in like network TV, but also it's just, I mean, you're working with a lot of people. And so there is like a bit of like admin on who you are. And if you are someone who goes on tangents, which is not me, but some people might be prone to lose themselves in a sentence and all of a sudden be on another exercise equipment when you've been asked to lunch. It's a little bit that practice of like, you know, it's kind of volleyball. You're bopping sentences around and people are talking and there's a hierarchy for sure. Like, you know, there's the showrunner, there's executive producers, there's producers, and then it goes all the way down. And then when you enter that room, you're low level, but then you're in your head. So everything feels so high pressure. So learning, but similar to stand up or to being on stage, it's again, that balance of like, having calculated things, but also being willing to participate and then knowing how far or not far to go with it. But the way that it starts when you write on are staffed on a show, you sit in a room or a Zoom room now in the present day, but with a bunch of people and the showrunner sort of guides you through the things that you need to do to envision the characters. And then the episodes. It always starts with the characters though. So you start with breaking the characters and then you start thinking about the situations you would want to see them in. Or if it's something like Search Party that's very serialized, you're thinking about the arc that you want to see those characters go on. I mean, ideally, no matter what, you are seeing the characters go on a journey throughout the season. So it's basically just the showrunner guiding a room full of people through the world of a show. And then starting to break episodes, which I have this board here.
Wow.
So that was like a whole new like language that I learned. It's like one, final draft is like a program that you need to understand. And then two, breaking stories is like, you know, there's an art and a math to it. And so that was sort of the uphill battle for me in my first show. And now just like with stand-up, it's like you kind of know where all the tools are and you know sort of where you're going with stuff. So now I do have with those two pilots, I'm writing them on my own, which is challenging because the natural sort of like way that you elevate things is to come together with a group and like my like hammer away at it as a group. And I really like that for TV writing. Especially talking it out. It's so important to talk it out. That's the thing, like the open mic, talking out the beats of what the story is that you're telling out loud always calls you to a higher level of honesty. Because you can get flowery in a document.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you start saying things out loud, so I find myself like right before we started talking, I got notes back on a script and I was playing with it. And I found myself walking around here and talking it out, like, you know, talking like the characters and stuff. So, you know, my neighbors think I've fallen off the deep end in the back house, just yammering in different characters' voices, but I'm addressing those notes. And just while we're here on this tangent of notes, do you get notes in your life?
Like notes from other people?
Yeah.
You know,
as I'm talking to you about this right now, I feel like no, right? It's you. It's
no,
your world. It's your
just
stuff.
Me. I will tell you, I did like my first, like for me, my first like big photo and video shoot for this project I was working on with Olay. And I realized at that shoot, I was working with a director and I did realize.
So that's notes.
Oh, I've never directed, or I'm self-directed, if anything, but I'm never like being directed by someone where like we did a take. And then she would come back and go, okay, for this next take, can you try to give me this kind of emotion? And I want, because I want to get that out of you in this light. Like she would explain to me the things. And it, we worked really well together. I enjoyed it. But I was also like, whoa, that was kind of odd and good. It was like felt odd, but felt good. Felt good to be sharpened in that regard, because really the only like entity I've had giving me like notes was really the audience, you know, was to be like, okay, well, that bit didn't work. We can tell that bit didn't work. Okay, we're going to try this story again. Okay, the order you did that, that doesn't work. I mean, that was the audience was like my only note. So to be in this other setting where there's no audience, there's just the camera to play to and the director's there. And also, I think in a way, this element of trusting your work with someone else to give you notes. I mean, that was kind of like a humbling thing for me that she wasn't giving me notes to say, you're not a professional, you're not, you know, what we need here. Now I'm having to give you notes to just help you. Like, it wasn't coming from that place. It was coming from like, oh yeah, like, I see it coming out of you. Give me more of this next time. And her being able to articulate that to me in a way that I could go, I can do that. I mean, it was wonderful. It was wonderful to get notes. I mean, sometimes I'm sure I get notes and I'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about because I'm brilliant. You know, and you don't need to tell me.
I'm realizing that, and this is not like, it's not going to be a likable thing that I say. Or maybe, I don't know, who fucking cares? You know what? Who cares what it is? I don't like notes. I hate it. I hate getting notes. It means every single time, whoever is giving me notes, it means I'm going to have to fucking work more. It means they didn't get it, which means, you know, that's... But I guess, I think talking to you right now, I'm realizing, similar to your experience, like, we were like marinated in a very insular cycle of expression. Like it's us versus it's us with the audience, but it's our work.
Yeah.
So when you are sharpening something and you're so used to sharpening it on your own, there is an element with notes on my work. I love to build things with people and to go down streams that people are, you know, are pointing out. And I love the collaboration of TV writing. But the notes process, even when it comes back to the team, it's always just like, well, why don't you try harder to get it? You know, like, why don't you just read page 3 again? But that is, you know, and that response, part of it can and should be natural because part of it is holding on to pieces of the expression that are necessary and the reason why you got on stage to begin with to tell the story, metaphorically speaking. And other and the other part of it is just a human ego lazy aspect of my mind that is like, well, I wanted to play with my fucking kid today instead of addressing the voiceover on page 8. Okay?
Look,
so maybe the actor will sell it better than you did when you read it in your head.
Okay.
Imagine. But I am like really practicing being expressing to people that give me notes the opposite of that, which maybe I should marry the two people. Like certainly people that have been on notes calls with me would be shocked to hear this truth.
I think what I'm wanting to get if I'm in a situation, I have done some client work. It's different from very different from stuff I write for stage, but I have done client work where we had to do that back and forth and get all the, I guess that's like a thing I get notes on in my life too. But I do feel like what I want from that experience, what like my artist ego wants from that, is I want to go into the meeting and give them the thing that I've written. And I want them to look at it and be like, wow, no changes. No changes.
Yes, exactly.
You
exactly.
Nailed exactly. it.
I could not even imagine any part of this that could be different.
And then I can be like, wow, thank you. Goes to get ice cream, you know? Instead, I'm in the meeting and you're like, well, this really didn't hit the theme in the way we were hoping it was going to hit the theme. And maybe like the rhythm here is a little, I think that's where like I start turning into like a monster is if I'm working mm-hmm. with someone and they start getting into like the mechanics of poems. And like, then I get yes. really like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you telling me about how a thing should rhyme? Because I don't. Like, then I have to have that talk with myself to be like, yeah, no, great. Okay, I took note of all those things. I'll do that. Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll for sure talk to a mechanic. all right. Yeah.
Get that
so
oil
good
changed.
Luck with your shampoo. Mm-hmm. Anyway, good luck with your shampoo.
Mm-hmm. On that paragraph.
Not shampoo. That's mm-hmm. too close to Olay. Something well. Completely different. Good luck with these frozen peas. I hope.
Hope it goes
I hope
well.
You move a lot Thank of frozen you. Peas this month.
Okay, Sabrina, tell the people who are listening right now, what Mm-mm. are shows they can stream that you have written or are writing on? People are streaming right now. They need to add this okay. to their list.
Okay, if you are streaming, I want you to first start out on Netflix, type in my name, Sabrina Jalees, J-A-L-E-E-S, the comedy lineup. I think I'm episode 6, maybe? And I'm wearing a cute little black onesie. That's where you're going to get a little taste. That's who Sabrina is. Then you're going to go as a homework assignment. And this is for the masters, okay? I actually will send you a JPEG of your Sabrina Jalees masters if you complete this. You're going to go check out season... Ooh, I forget which season of Big Mouth I wrote on. The one that just came out. It's the one that just came out. The brand new season of Big Mouth. Starts out at summer camp. It's an Emmy-winning show. Go check it out. And then you're going to go to HBO Max. You're going to watch Search Party. You're going to see me on episode 8 of season 3 because I did write that episode and I wrote on that season. And then, I don't know, after that, you got to look up, you know, episodes of my podcast, The Goody Goody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of, to be honest, I'm overwhelmed for you. Like, this is a lot, and it's a lot of pressure that your family's got a lot of pressure on you, and your mom's always calling, wishing that you'd called more. And it's like, I can't, you know, I don't have anything else to say to you. I'll call you when I have something to say to you, is what you should tell your mom. Just kidding. You got to call her every day if she's a nice mom. Write to me. Let me know what kind of mom you have, and I'll tell you how many days a week to call her. And then also follow me on Instagram. And that was simply how you answer the question, what shows have you written on that I can watch on streaming platforms? That's how you take simply an inch on a podcast and you simply drive a mile. And will it get cut? Surely. But not from Amina's ears. And it is a tough economy out there. And it was worth it for me to have Amina hear it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed every moment of that. I mean, I enjoyed that there was like a progression of like, this is the place you begin. And after you've done this thing, you watch this, then you move on to that. Then you move on to that. I mean, the way you spun that thing, I'm in there.
I love you.
I'm in there, Sabrina.
I love you. And mm-hmm. I should have sliced in some peaches in there too. Have a little peach, have a little bath.
Okay. There is still time. You know. There is still
pour an entire bottle of wine into a small fish tank. Pour yourself a bath, and that's that's when you're going to want to pull up the archives and watch the kids show that I hosted called In Real Life. It went for 3 seasons. Amazing Race, but for kids.
Wow.
Canadian production company. So we did insane things that in America you would sue people for doing with kids. They were feeding crocodiles. Wrestling crocodiles, riding bulls? What were we doing with those kids? And where was I on the gender spectrum? I was wearing skirts. I was wearing skorts, dangly necklace, earring tiaras. But sometimes military pants and a tank top. In Real Life. Searchable on YouTube.
I'm going to tell you the part of that that took me out the most was the skort. I think that just that word was there as soon as I heard the skort, that's really what took me to a new place, I have to say. Okay, I want to close our conversation with this question. And I have to give a shout out to comedian Vanessa Fraction for inspiring this question. So many years ago in the By and By, my husband and I hosted a show, a live show, and we had to book comedians and poets and singers to be a part of it. And I booked Vanessa Fraction, but I'm like anal retentive about people like being in the place they're supposed to be. So I was like, okay, you're going to be on at 9:30. Please show up at 8:00. So I just know like you're there and you're going to be there and you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote back to me and she said, hey, since I'm not going on until 9:30, can I just come at 9? Sitting around is bad for the funny. And ever since she said it to me, I have never forgotten that. And of course, after that, I'd go to some other shows and like, you know, again, with the have to get there early, have to get there so early. And I'm like, it's 5 o'clock and I don't go on until 10. And now I got to what? Five hours to like, this is not
lose
good for
my
the funny.
Funny.
You know, what am I doing? So I want to ask every woman of color comedian that I talk to, what is good for the funny? Like in your life, in your process, what's the stuff that is good for the funny?
Well, off of Vanessa Fraction's sort of thinking, it is true that like it's momentum is important, you know, like there's something about people say comedy, stand-up comedy in New York it's like the best town for it, or London. And it's because there's so much opportunity to be on stage. So it's practice. But I think there's also something to that momentum of going from one place to the next place. Not only that it's fresh in your mind, but the energy that you pick up, you know, it's like energy is all of it, especially since like we said at the beginning, it's like the currency is connection. So if you come in with that energy of like already having connected or reacting to whatever the last show was, there's something really, I think, electric about that. What's good for the funny is tension, like we said, pointing out a place that people, you know, everybody's seen, but nobody's really talking about. Like that dirty corner. Also, I mean, like for me right now, I am thinking about these people in Capitol Hill. If I was doing a set tonight, there's something about being connected to the moment together, all of us in it together. And like right after something like that, having your take or your feelings, and also having those feelings sort of be connected to the despair that we feel, where it's like, are these fucking people, like, where is the bottom here? I guess that would be categorized as tension, but like just reaching around, it feels like a big sort of, it feels like you're just sort of like to me, a great stand-up set feels like, I see you being the crowd, and we just sort of like walk and talk together, you know?
Yeah.
And we're like moving, you know, it's like that sort of movement of like, we're all like, this is what we're talking about. And we have each other's backs and we're all here. I mean, this is obviously like cut to like a stand-up comic smashing a glass over a lady's head in the front row. It's like not everybody's style.
Yeah, right.
how long have you been together for? You both look unhappy.
How old are you? That's
what's
what
good.
Sounds
what's
like.
Good for the funny is connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was 19 different answers.
Yo.
Something for everyone. Something to connect with.
Listen, if you follow all 19 of those answers and you do the progressive Sabrina Jalees experience, the progressive stream, I feel like that could be close to a PhD, honestly. Like a Sabrina Jalees.
Honestly.
PhD. You do
You'd
both
have
of
a
those
six
things.
Pack for sure.
So.
You'd have a full six pack. You would be like meditating like you always said you would. You'd be that version of yourself before the pandemic, you know, like the hopeful version. That's who you would be if you did all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd write me on Instagram, you'd DM me and say, tell me about those vitamins you've been selling that like help your mind go good. I want to add a 20th thing is honesty. I think I already hit it when we were talking about other stuff, but honesty I think is really good for the funny.
I love that too. Mm-hmm. I think it's true. You can't be lying, and well, I guess you could lie and try to be funny.
Well, sometimes there's like a lot. Well, I think that you get in the cycle, in the cycle of like practicing it, in the cycle of like polishing jokes, people can start missing what the point is of what they were trying to say to begin with. And you'll see, you could see comics starting with a premise and you're like, do you even believe that? This joke is built on a wacky surprise, you know, the understanding that like setup and punch is this misdirect and then woo, crazy things happening. But I think honesty will get you there more consistently on better ground.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think that's right. Because I think there is something about even the honesty of like how you as a performer come into that moment of stage. I mean, I think you talked about that earlier too, which I thought was so powerful, but I think that is a part of it. It's like how I have entered that moment, if I'm fully in my skin, you know, if I'm actually there present, I think that's a part of the honesty too. I think that's it. That was a good 20th thing. If y'all do all those things, you going to get your Sabrina Jalees degrees. You going to get that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's what people are looking for in the job market.
I hope y'all laughed as much as I laughed during that conversation with Sabrina. I'm so glad that she was a guest in her living room, and she was having even more of an experience than just like the hummus and little chocolate bars we normally have in here. You can get more of Sabrina Jalees's funny on her Instagram at Sabrina Jalees and her website, sabrinajalees.com. And you can find out about all of this and more links to the different things we talked about in our conversation in the show notes on aminabrown.com/herwithamina. And I hope you're following me already, but if you're not, let's be Twitter and IG friends. You can follow me at Amina B. E. For this week's Give Her a Crown, I want to shout out singer-songwriter Kim Hill. And a big thank you to Black Twitter for making me aware of her. Kim Hill is one of the original members of the Black Eyed Peas, and she shared her story of being almost famous and leaving the Black Eyed Peas in a New York Times documentary a couple of years ago. Recently, Kim had to speak on her time with the Black Eyed Peas again as she experienced something that far too many Black women experience, being erased from history. I was inspired by her story, by her choice to navigate the music industry differently out of respect for herself and in order to raise her son well. Thank you to Kim Hill. I wanted to lift up your name and your story because you sharing your story reminded me that Black women have choices, that we can choose what is best for us, even in the face of working in industries that do not have concern for our well-being. We can choose health, we can choose peace, and we can choose our joy. Kim Hill, give her a crown. Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.